Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just for my heart, it's always my talk cast every Thursday night, starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either join the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions, and the call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to Talk's website at www.talkshoe.com. Search for call ID 17702. Or you can actually join us, the great happy band, over on Twitch. So let's go to twitch.com/SFUOnCall. That's SFUONCALL. And you will find us there. And you'll find the group that likes to chat over there. I think if you're going to take one or the other, I would definitely go over to Twitch if you're going to be here for the live broadcast. If you want to call in, Talk Shoes is definitely your jam. And of course, you need to contact me for any reason. My email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. It's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to follow me on Twitter, yes, I still have an account on Twitter. I have not abandoned it like some people. So just go there. And it's sfuoncall. Also, I have a personal account called Paul Franz. That's PAULFRANZ. Yes, there is no T in that. For those people in Pennsylvania, I'm not sure why they like to add T. But anyhow, if you want to follow me, that's great. I'm more than happy to have people follow me. Just a reminder that I'm an O's fan. I love technology. And of course, I love being a Catholic. Anything that bothers you, don't follow me. Also, I would tertiary account called Franz Games, so if you want to keep it up to date for what's happening in Franz Games, you lately it's been very little, but you know, other than you know, Starfleet Warlord continues on, new games start, new games end, and complete that all together. And of course, this lovely TalkCast gets turned into a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from ADB. Steve Petrick, our variable Steve Petrick, the rules person, the king of the tournaments. He had his first cataract surgery this past Tuesday. It all went very well. They took the bandage off yesterday. I think it was yesterday or today. I'm sorry, I didn't get the timeline correct. But when they took off the bandage, he was able to read a normal-sized book a few minutes without glasses at all, which is awesome to hear. I'm assuming my understanding from what I read, it's not like it was his first eye. He might actually have to have cataract surgery on his second eye, too, which will be interesting. It's good to see that Mr. Petrick is actually starting to recover from all of the ailments of him. Hopefully, he'll see this and take a little bit of care of himself in the future. Just a reminder, of course, if you are interested in Starfleet battles but don't want to spend any money, you want to find out what the game is like, the Cadet Training Manual is and the Cadet Training Handbook are both available on the different e-tailers. You know, Warehouse 23, you've got Drive-Thru RPG, and of course you got Worm Game Vault. All three of those have that and it's available for free. Doesn't cost you a dime. And if you want they have a link, which is starfleetgames.com/cadettraining.shtml, but you should be able to go there and find the different links to the different e-tailers. I think the only reason they have on theirs is mainly because of it saves them bandwidth costs. And of course, also, ADB has a Twitter account too, which is ADB INC, that's like incorporated, abbreviation for incorporated, _Amarillo. So if you want to follow them, you can follow them also on Twitter. They are still on Twitter. It has not been abandoned ship yet. Moving onward, SFB Online Tournament, Sapphire Star Tournament 11 is starting. We have the first game, it's already complete. Jason Gray beat David Zimbers in the first game. And actually, I have to look at that because my understanding is there was a glitch when he reported the game. I'm not sure what it is. I wish he would have sent me an email about that, but I'll see if I can check the website and see if there's anything that got logged on that error. Also, when it comes to the SFB Online library, the SFB portion, Frank LeMay, don't ask me. He actually did some updates to some of the SSDs to correct some errors. And those will be updated in the library shortly. He told me last night, and of course, it's Thursday, so most of my time was busy doing other things like cooking for my family and getting ready for the podcast. So with that is the news for this week. And this means the one and only Paul Friends welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, we've got Barry, we've got Gary, we've got me. And of course, we have the lovely, lovely chat room that is all along in the mostly over on Twitch. So if you're over on TalkShoe, go over to Twitch. It's better. That's where all the cool kids hang out. So, Barry, how you doing?
I am not going to Twitch.
I wouldn't expect you to go to Twitch. As I said, I mentioned in the news portion of this, you know, the beginning of this podcast, for those who actually listen to the podcast and not actually watch the video, you miss some things if you just watch the video. And that is that I did mention that if you want the best experience when it comes, you want to call in, you got to be able to talk to. If you want just to have the best chat room experience, go over to Twitch. Actually, I think Gary actually has an account over on Twitch. Am I right, Gary?
Sorry?
That you have an account over on Twitch?
I don't think so.
I could swear I saw Neroth over there. Okay. Maybe I am just misremembering and just totally out there. Oh, okay. Dave, I guess what, Barry, I was wrong. It was not Twilight Zone. It was Outer Limits.
Ah.
Dave.
Yeah, I never watched that one.
I didn't watch it either. I just remember that clip being brought up in another TV shows. You know? So, that's only... It was really cool. But anyhow, the reason why we're gathered here this evening, men, women, children of all ages, we're here to talk about Starfleet Universe, and tonight, talk about Omega. Right, Gary?
Well, so 2 weeks ago, we were having a chat about the quantum wave torpedo. We were kind of dissecting the ins and outs of the rules for it, and we talked a little bit about how it would have been used against... in the Module C6 timelines, like, they would have been hit their historical enemies in the Alpha Octon, so like the ISC, the Orions, the Gorns, and Andromedans as well. So this time around, I was wondering if it'd be worth... it hasn't yet been formally stated that the Paravians and Omega use the same rules, but I'd say it's a pretty good bet to... work with that assumption. In terms of like if either the Paravians themselves are using it against enemies like the Trobriand or Probor or Mistrons, whatever, or if the Zeltman Marauders from Captain's Log 50 and 52 were using this as a pirate weapon, how the ins and outs would be for making use of that weapon there as opposed to using it in Alpha.
Yeah, originally we were discussed last week, but you weren't here. And I figured since you're actually more of an expert on Omega weapons, Barry, much more familiar with them than I am, that it would be best if we delayed discussion of said topic until we could get your expertise involved.
Okay, I'm not as familiar with the quantum wave torpedo. So,
okay, it's actually quite cool.
Oh, I think I had called it. I had called it up, and I think I had the module, and I called it up on my computer.
Right, I think it was. Was that module C6, Barry? I mean, Gary.
Yes, and
it's module C6. That's correct.
Okay.
It's the rules start on page.
Yeah, FQ.
F15. Yeah, because we had the rules up and we were going through it. And actually, Barry, if you recall, you were checking some of the SSDs as well, because I was suggesting that the command cruiser might be a good basis for a tournament check for them, maybe.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah, you were very impressed with it because of it only, I think, it took 2 points. You have 2 points of power to arm the torpedo. Right. Each one.
Yeah, it was cheap to arm, if I remember correctly.
Yep, 2 points to arm and 1 point to hold.
Yeah, that's a cheap weapon. It almost seems overpowered.
Yeah, I'm looking here. There it is.
There were some downsides to it, if I remember.
Right, because the damage, non-overloaded from 0 to 7, it's only 7 points of damage. Overloaded damage is 12.
Right, coming back to me. Right, but the other problem is that it takes a lot of damage to stop it, and it's completely or almost completely unaffected by damage until you kill it.
Right, and didn't...
And that is... You can't, it's not like a weapon like a plasma where you can degrade it. Like, right. Okay, I'll do some damage, at least lessen the impact. That one, there is one break point, but other than that, it's almost full strength until it's gone. And it's like, wow. And it takes a lot to make it go gone.
Right, exactly. And if I recall correctly, didn't it also, yeah. Quantum wave torpedoes have 3 points of ECM built in, which makes it even harder to kill.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's automatically
right.
a plus one shift.
That is a weapon that is, you're pretty much running it out.
Yep.
You don't have much choice about that. And that's painful.
Right, and these are
especially it was fairly fast arming, if I remember correctly, compared to a plasma torpedo.
Right, it's a single turn arming weapon.
Three.
It's a single turn.
Or no, single turn arming weapon that you have to run out. Wow, that's what I'm saying. I think that's a little overpowered, if you ask me.
Not really. If you
I
agree that when it comes to overall the amount of damage it does for the amount of power you put into it, yeah. But also, there is no bolting, and it is a seeking. So it is a seeking weapon. Period.
Yes.
So, when it comes to. Actually, wasn't it overloaded? You have to have warp.
Yes, it's requires 2 points of warp to overload, and the Fravians don't have any warp reactors.
Right. So I would.
Which,
but what's interesting is that
late warp model.
Yes, Gary.
Of course, a late war model might add auxiliary warp reactors.
Right, that's one
thing. No, there's no refit for the warp reactors in the module C6 because they don't scale too well. Like once the ISB and Gorn start getting their heavier plasmas and stuff, the cruisers, at least, or dreadnoughts that paraded, start falling off a bit. But in Omega, though, I guess the thing would be, like, their first main enemy would probably be the Trobriand. And the Trobriand, they don't have great shields, but they've got all that armor. But on the other hand, they don't have... I mean, the radiation phasers don't degrade much in an EW environment, but they don't have that many of them because Trobriand ships are very kind of weighted towards their heavy weapons rather than their phasers. So I wonder, like, so basically, if the Trobriand can catch the Paravians, then things will get real messy. But if they can't, then if the Paravians able to keep the distance open, then I wonder how things would pan out that way.
Well, the other problem with the Trobriands is that their weapons degrade very quickly with the, over distance. So, in the Paravians, basically, their weapon doesn't degrade over distance. So, the Paravians would want to fight at a distance.
Right. Oh, agreed there.
Yeah.
Because and they could actually do it quite effectively because of, you know, even for standard torpedoes out to range 7, that's 7 points of damage. And so whenever they'd be coming in for an attack, whenever anybody, whether they're in the Omega or Alpha, both of them, you know, when they get into overload range, so obviously with Omega, if I recall correctly, they have to come in a little closer for overloaded range. Usually it's like 6, I think it is.
A lot of races, yes. 6 is overload range.
So even to get into overload range, if the Paravian player, you know, if he times it right, he can have it so that they have to do something about the torpedoes, or whether that means hitting against the shield, or it's actually knocking it down, you know, using phasers, or other damage. I know it's phasers. I forget. There's some other thing that also affects it. Obviously, like
asteroids,
things like that.
But the problem is but the problem is that it's almost impossible to knock it down unless you kill it completely.
Right. And
that takes a lot of damage.
Right. And if you time it right, basically, especially in the Omega, they have to do something with it before they even have a chance to get into overloaded range. Which means on one-on-one battles, you know, a Paravian with a quantum wave torpedo probably would have a leg up versus when you're in more of a fleet battle, fleet battle where you're talking, you get into overloaded range, but that's a rare thing. You rarely, in fleet battles, you really want to be usually in longer ranges, you know, around, I'm going to say around 14 or 12, between 12 and 14. You're usually not closing because if you close, the ships die really fast when you get close, when you're closing. And not just the small ships that you're used to seeing pop off and die. Your major capital ships, your larger ships are going to start biting the dust when you start getting that close. And the question is, do you want a chance at when you get that close? So that's going to be for the quantum wave torpedo. Actually, that's not bad. That's still 6 points of damage out to range 14. No, which is darn good compared to like disruptors in the Alpha and Omega. I'm not as familiar with the direct fire weapons that are available out for that. What are some of the ones that, what kind of damage would they be looking at like range 12 from the different empires?
So the Mazaron Okay, so the Mazron is your basically the Federation equivalent, and their Tachyon gun is extremely accurate at those kinds of ranges. So your hit number is 1 through 5 on a D1D6, and I think that's out to range 15, and it has that accuracy, and it does a little more damage than a disruptor at that range. On the downside, that's a 2-turn arming weapon. So,
So how about the Shrobrin with the implosion bolts?
Well, the implosion bolts are accurate and pretty fairly high powered, but they don't have very many of them.
Mm-hmm. What's the arming cycle? Is it two?
What?
Is it two turns three or turns. Three turns?
It's three a turns? 3-turn arming, but I think you can fast load it.
You can fast load it in the second turn. And bear in mind that historically the Trobriand has a bolt cruiser variant which has 4 implosion bolts.
Right. It has 4 implosion bolts.
For CA? Or is that for...
What's that?
4 implosion bolts, is that what like a heavy cruiser would have?
Yes, their heavy cruiser has 3 main variants. Well, more than 3, but in terms of combat variants, there's a torpedo variant, which has no implosion bolt at all. It only has the implosion torpedoes. Then there's the bolt cruiser, which has more implosion bolts and fewer implosion torpedoes. And then the standard heavy cruiser has only 2 implosion bolts. And bear in mind that for the Trobriand, it's one or the other. So their implosion torpedoes can't be bolted, and the implosion bolts have no seeking function. So it's basically like in the Alpha Octant, if you basically turned the plasma bolt and the plasma torpedo into 2 entirely separate option mounts.
Hmm. Right.
Okay.
Yeah. In that sense, the implosion system is less flexible. But the implosion bolts are far more powerful than a plasma bolt and a lot more accurate, too. And, but you can't not bolt it. But you can arm it to full strength as long as you use batteries on the second turn of arming for the fast load. So, you might want to think about alternating. If you don't have enough batteries, you might alternate firing them so you can that way you're firing one every other turn, or every turn you're firing one.
And that's one reason why the bolt cruiser has a bigger battery deck than the standard heavy cruiser.
Yes, that would make sense.
But actually, when it comes to, because another empire that the Paravians have a problem with would be the Prober, because the Paravians basically don't like any lizard species, no matter where they are. But the Prober would actually be in a different situation, because they'd be wanting to stay at medium range with their heats, and their quantum phasers, they're relatively weak, but they have the ECCM, so they'd actually have, you know, in as much damage as they would do against the quantum wave torpedo, they'd be able to burn through the ECM more easily. And so it would be a question as to like how, like if both sides are bombarding each other at medium range, who has the advantage? But the only thing is that, because in Model C6 at least, the Paravians no longer have the issue where if they degrade their port starboard warp engines, they have a worse turn load. But the Probers still have that problem. So if the Paravians do well, then they'd have an advantage in that sense, and that they'd be able to cause trouble for the Prober in terms of their agility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that is true. The heats are very power intensive. So if you're using them at any standard rate, the Prober basically gets stuck because they're putting all their power into weapons. And that was one of the problems when I was creating the tournament creatures, is they just didn't have enough power.
Mm-hmm.
I could not figure out how to get the Prober to work
mm-hmm.
Against anybody. Just too freaking weak.
Understood. Yeah, I was looking at the L'Oreal with the fireballs. Yeah, it requires two turns to arm.
Yeah.
How much power does that require? Two turns, 1 point of energy for each turn. So it's not power intensive.
The fireballs was an awesome weapon because there's an overload function for it that turns it into an enveloper.
Wow.
Yeah. That's the true power of that weapon. Put her in enveloping mode.
It turned out the historical reason why is because the soldier, once they showed up, the soldier have their shield blocks. So if they're fighting an empire that doesn't have an enveloping function, the soldier are much more flexible in terms of concentrating the shield blocks they have in those, if they have facings. But when they're fighting the L'Oreal, the overloaded hot fireballs suddenly give the soldier, like, they can't basically have a freebie in terms of, like, off-facing shields. Like, they have to spread them around. And, of course, the L'Oreal have much thicker shields than the soldier do, so it's not necessarily a winning proposition for the soldier to get caught into that cycle.
Well, the L'Oreal are specifically designed to fight the soldier.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is that no one actually knew that when Omega 1 came out, because the soldier didn't get published until Omega 3. And so it was basically, in retrospect, that is true, like the L'Oreal are ideal for fighting the soldier. But the problem is that they didn't basically release them. They should have released them together. So then it would have been a better mix for people to be able to get, you know, understand them properly. So, but then that's a whole other topic in terms of how the various empires were released.
Well, that's an interesting point. I had not picked up on that. You're absolutely right. Interesting.
Yeah, because another thing too is, if you look back, the Drex were released in Module Omega 1. And at the time, they were, I guess, quote-unquote neutral, but it wasn't until Omega 3 when two of their main enemies, the Umatrians and the Warp, were released. So they should have been, those three empires should have been grouped together as well, because it would have made more sense to offer a product where these factions are kind of grouped together and you can get a better sense of what's going on. So in theory, now, this was like a long range thing, but if a Federation commander ever got to that point for Omega, that's how I would do it. I would want to group these factions into opposing, groupings that make sense historically, but not wedded to the release schedule that SFE Omega had.
So adjust the release schedule to make things make sense. That makes sense. You can follow what I just said.
Another enemy that the Paravians would fight is the Federal Republic, because there's a couple of lizard species in the FRA which they take exception to. But also, they do during the Y210s, there's like a major war between the Prober and the Trobran, and the Paravians are basically attacking the Prober on the Trobran's on their own behalf, but also as allies of the Trobran. So the FRA basically side with the Prober. So from that point on, you'd have direct combat between Paravian and FRA ships. So then you'd have, like, I guess, something closer to what you'd see in the Alpha Octant, because the FRA have standard phaser ones and stuff. But their short-range cannon aren't any use because they're more used against things like tachyon missiles or other drone-like weapons, but they're of no use against plasma-like weapons. So so then you basically got a question as to what kind of tactics the FRA would need to consider when they're facing Paravians, and how that would differ to what the Federation would have to use back in the Alpha Octant.
Right. That's interesting. Yeah.
But actually, when you think about it, oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that because both the Trobran and the FRA, they've got their armor, but they have relatively weaker shields because of it. So there's not really an historical enemy that the Paravians would have back in Alpha that matches that.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, the quantum wave torpedo helps if you're expecting to fight an enemy who's fighting behind their shields, but then once you get into the internals, you're just directly into internals. But with both the Trobran and the FRA, you've still got the armor to stop you from getting at the innards of a ship. At least for a time.
Yeah. Yeah, the armor's only going to last so long.
Yeah.
And we'd mentioned the Andromedans before, but also the Soldra, because they'd be the Paravian home territory in Omega, is just right next to the Void. So they'd actually be on the front lines of the Soldra invasion. So the Paravians can be fed on by Soldra black shards. And I mean, the Soldra dark matter torpedoes are also the kind of weapons that basically, they don't degrade until they're gone. Like, they take a lot of, like, you have to basically shoot them down entirely or run them out. And then you've got to worry about things like the dark matter damage procedure and so on. So I wonder how much trouble the Paravians would have against them.
Everybody has trouble with the Soldra. They are very, very powerful.
Do the Drex have problems with the Soldra?
It's... What's that?
Do the Drex
have problems? Probably not, because they have an enveloper direct fire weapon that's very accurate, and they can shoot it at any angle. You know, they can be, they have weapons coming out every angle of their ship. So I wouldn't think that, I would think the Drex would, Drex are very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And being robots, they don't have to worry about black shards and vampirism.
Right. That's nothing else.
Oh, yeah.
That was nothing I was thinking about.
So the soldier. Yeah, Soldra wouldn't really want to attack them. There's no benefit. They can't eat them. Like, there's no, oh, okay, I beat them, so what? I didn't get anything out of it. What's the point of fighting it? Why take that chance?
Right.
Yeah, the Andros would be a much bigger threat to the Drex than the Soldra would be.
That's one thing I have not read up on, which is Soldier versus Andromedans, in that interaction.
Well, on the one hand, too much.
What's that, Barry?
Well, on the one hand, the soldier can't consume the Andromedans. So that doesn't. Now, no one knows for sure if that means that the Andros aren't alive themselves, or if it means that their form of life is so alien that even the soldier can't eat them. But either way, the soldier can't eat them. But the dark matter damage procedure, basically, it goes directly to degradation and onto internals. So when the soldier is shooting at you, it doesn't fill up your PA panels.
Yeah. All damage being degradation is not a good thing.
Which means I have no idea how to represent that in Spectre Commander.
True.
That's a valid point.
Jeez. I'm trying to imagine if this ever happens, which is, I'm sure first we'd have to get FedCom, Omega and FedCom first before this could happen, which is Starmada. Because as I know, Starmada, if I recall correctly, the Andromedans is currently in the beta with Daniel when it comes to Starmada. But putting Omega would be interesting. Though I have to admit that when it comes to Starmada itself, Starmada is, when it comes to weapons, is very flexible about how it represents damage and things like that. It's a very good engine overall. At least I think so. What was I going to say, Gary? I'm sorry.
So one of the things is that most of the other game systems don't represent crew units. So, because the big thing with Soldier Vampirism is that you're killing the crew. But like in Fed Commander, for example, there is no crew. Like there, you have the units' brains, like the boarding parties.
Right.
But that's it. So, how would you, even against an enemy that's not the Andromedans, like if you're fighting just a regular opponent, like how would you actually represent the concept of stealing their life force in a game system where there is no life force to steal, like in terms of it being on the ship card? So that might be a bit of a challenge.
Right. And as this,
that would be weird.
Yeah. And as it stands, really, when it comes to crew units, it's a rare thing that crew units are ever, until the Soldier actually existed. Crew units, for the most part, we really didn't pay attention to crew units, even in fleet battles. You know, other than if we were having to worry about boarding parties. And okay, how many boarding parties do we have now available because we lost so many crew units? That's about the only time we ever were worried about crew units and how much damage we took to a ship, you know.
Well, bear in mind that the Sigvirians can assimilate crews, and the Arachnids out in Triangulum as well. So, because the Sigs are actually released, that's another one as well. Because the Sigs were basically thrown into the pile in Module Omega 1, but maybe they would have been better. I mean, who would you even pick as their historical rival? Because they try to infect everybody. But even basically trying to, you know, represent them, because like they'd be very interested in your crew. And actually, to go back to the Paravians, because another problem that they have is that because they've got so many boarding parties, that's even more food for the soldier to consume, because you can't board the soldier, but they can still kill your Marines and gain airing from us.
But the Sigvirians they're broken. I have not been able to figure out how to get them to work properly.
Yeah, well,
they have a torpedo that.
I know.
Their torpedo gains strength and then loses strength.
Right.
So there's two strategies for dealing with it. You can run into it or run away from it. And that's the problem, is that if you fire it too close, they're going to run into it, and it's going to be very weak when it hits. And if you fire from too far away, you have plenty of time to run it out. So there's no real way to get it to work.
Oh, agreed.
Because all the flexibility is...
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Well, that's the thing, is that historically, they were designed to raid the assimilate planets. So their key advantage is if they know where the planet's going to be. So they can bombard any defenses. And then, because they can land on the planet, they can basically start sending out marines and try to infect the locals. So they, even historically, like it's they weren't really intended to be able to survive being on the defensive. So it's trickier that way. But the other thing as well is that you could basically take another Empire ship and basically say the crew are Sigurians because they've already managed to infect them. Because they do show up in like Zosman or Belosco or other ships. So if the Sigurians as a starship are a problem, you could still have Sigurians as a faction. You basically just... pick a ship from an Empire that they can infect, and then just give them the boarding rules for infecting other Empires. But that'd be a way to kind of sidestep, you know, the fact that their own ships are a problem to balance.
Yeah, their ships are hugely a problem.
Agreed.
But then
you're not really fighting six ships. And yes, you're right that they're killer kick ass against fixed defenses. But if anybody were to see them coming and they were to send their Navy out to intercept them, the SIGs can't stop. That's the SIGs' weakness, is that they cannot attack somebody with a Navy. They could attack somebody's starbase, but they can't attack your Navy.
Mm-hmm. If you think about it like this, if you're a Romulan, I mean, if you want to be really picky about it, you could ask whether or not the imported Klingon ships are really as Romulan as the ships they build themselves. But in practice and stuff, no one's basically going to a tournament and say you can't take the TKR. Like, people would still, I mean... You couldn't just say you have to take the Firehawk or you have to take the King Eagle. So, I mean, it's... But then, of course, that's going back to the 1960s because it was the original series that basically gave the Romulans Klingon ships. So that was kind of basically baked into the FFB from the beginning. So, yeah,
oh,
I mean, it's...
That's a Klingon ship. Where did they get that?
Well, they no longer had the filming model for the Bird of Prey, so they had to use the Klingon ship, and they basically came up with an excuse to let the Romulans have it.
Oh, they actually lost the model.
Well, there's all sorts of urban legends about it, like apparently it was destroyed or whatever happened, so they didn't actually, it didn't exist to be used, so...
Oops. Well, we're going to be using Romulans. Oh, where's that model? Oh, crap, we can't find it. What do we do?
Gotta love that.
Well, you know, I mean, I think if you think about it in Starfleet Universe terms, we wouldn't have the Firehawk or the Sparrowhawk if it wasn't for the Klingon, the Kestrel ships as an intermediary. Like, especially if you look at the Mongoose designs, like, or the Plus designs on Shapeways, they really evoke the sense that the Romulans were influenced by Klingon starship design, mm-hmm. but took it in their own direction. So, overall, I think it's been a benefit that they've been able to do that. So.
Oh, agreed. Yeah. Agreed. As a jumping off point from the old ships to something brand new, it's a great, the KRs, the Kestrels, were a great in between ship to let it flow right into a brand new design. taken up by the Romulans.
And of course, I mean, it might be a bit self-serving to think that, because when you look at the Shapeways miniatures for the Paravians, I think it'd be interesting to have them think, consider, like, say, if there was a timeline where the Paravians were the ones who sold warp technology to the Romulans. So you'd basically be giving Romulan players an excuse to buy the Paravian ships on Shapeways and use them for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Because they already have that kind of bird of prey, like, design, and the feathers, like, on the miniature. So they're very Romulan-y, if you think of it that way.
Yeah.
So, actually, just one final thing about the quantum wave torpedo in Omega is, now, again, because it hasn't been formally confirmed that it exists there, it hasn't been formally stated that the Zosman ships can have it. But since the quantum wave torpedo is available to the Orions in the Lost Empire's timeline, like, the weapon is not, it's not a restricted weapon. So, technologically speaking, there's nothing stopping those Osmonds from using it if the weapon exists to be stolen. So, but if you look at those Osmond SSDs, I don't know if you still have them there, Paul, in Captain Block 50 or 52. One key advantage that those Osmonds have is that they can pay a BPV surcharge to install warp reactors onto their ships. So that can basically help them pay for the overloads without having to use up their warp power. So they actually have almost like a better budget for the quantum wave torpedoes than the Paravians themselves have.
Interesting.
And the other thing too is, so I don't know, like, I guess hopefully Paul will get a chance to show you this during the summer sometime. But if, and on the SSDs for the Zosman pirate ships or marauder ships, they have rules in terms of the firing arcs for the weapon modules on the front of the ship. And it states that ordinarily the firing arcs are FA, but for certain weapons at least, you can pay an extra 2 BPV per mount, I think it's per mount, and you can actually expand that to either a front horizontal or front plasma, depending on which type of weapon you're using. So, for example, right now, if you have a Zosman ship operating with Trogon weapons, if you install the implosion torpedoes, the standard love start look would be FA, but then you pay the surcharge, and now it's FP. So the question I would have is, if it turns out the Zosmans are allowed to use quantum wave torpedoes, should they also be able to pay the surcharge and expand the firing arcs, the launch arc to FP, even when the Paravians themselves can't do that? Because there aren't any Paravian units, so far as I'm aware, that have anything better than a 120-degree firing arc for the quantum wave torpedo.
Mm-hmm.
So is this something that the Zosmans should be allowed to do, or should the Zosmans be stuck with the same FA arc as the Paravians themselves?
Yeah, well, that is always a question, though, which is, can the weapon itself can it have the arcs expanded as a weapon itself, but is there a limitation to the weapon that's not possible,
say in the rules? I mean, there's no rule giving them a swivel mount in that sense. Like, for example, like, if you're reading, but the thing as well is that within the Alpha Octant, if you're looking at, say, a Gorn or a Romulan ship, is the rule about the swivel mount, is it in the R section of the ship itself or for the Empire?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it in the rule for the plasma torpedo itself? So, in other words, is it an Empire rule or is it a weapon rule?
Hmm. Good point. Yeah, and actually, one additional thing, the Zosmans actually, which is interesting, because I was looking at the Zalesman ships, and of course, they have it so that the APRs can be converted to AWRs, which obviously the original Peravian ships did not have AWRs. But if we go for the kind of lost, not quite lost history, but divergent history, you know, what would happen if the Peravians would have stayed, like had survived as an empire within the Alpha Octant, and then continue to improve their ships and continue to improve their weapons? You could definitely see that in the future they would have added AWRs to their ships. I think that
except that that's not in Module C6. Says even the later ships that they build, like the heavy battle cruiser and the heavy dreadnought, mm-hmm. they still only have APRs.
Which to me that makes no sense. Well, okay,
right.
Okay. Well, the cool. Yeah. Now, Gary, I think you probably know this better than I do because I didn't read the actual history, the alternate history, when it comes to the Peravians, if they wouldn't have been basically mostly killed off by the Sun Snake imploding on their sun. And that is, when it comes to the general war, what side would they be on?
They're on the Coalition side. Okay. They fight alongside the Romulans.
Okay.
And actually, there's even rules, provisional rules in Federation and Empire, where, okay, so right now in F&E, the Coalition, like the Klingons and Lyrans, on the western side of the Alpha Octant,
mm-hmm.
there's rules where the Klingons have access to the Lyran off-map zone. They lease, basically, access to that territory. So there's a limited amount of expansion that the Klingons can do in the Firestar zone at the surface of the Lyrans. Now, the same applies for the Peravian Fire Nest, their off-map zone, and the Romulans, because in the map sheet P, if you recall, if you have Module C6 in front of you there, you'll recall that the IFC expand towards the Galactic Rim. So they actually block off the Romulans from direct access to the off-map. So instead, the Romulans basically have to, whenever they're able to establish direct contact with the Peravians, they'd have to go into the off-map by leasing access from the Peravians themselves. So it's a similar dynamic, but the difference is that the Klingon and Lyran border is usually pretty solid because, like, the Hydrans and the Xentis can't really interfere with that well. So it's not even until the ISC show up that anyone tries to impose a blockage there. So, but on the other hand, because of Map Sheet P, the Peravians and the Romulans are not interconnected because they're at that crossroads with the Gorns and ISC as well. So any kind of border war that breaks out, the key focus would be to capture those provinces so that they can establish a direct link. And of course, the ISC and Gorns would be like, no, we don't want that to happen. So they'd be basically trying to close that link themselves.
Right.
Makes sense, yeah.
Oh, yeah, agreed.
But the Omega is a different story again, because in the Y210s, when the Peravians are supporting the Trobriand are the ones fighting on the front lines. But the Peravians, the treaty with the Trobriand allows them to pass through the Trobriand Empire, launch raids against their enemies, and then travel back without being attacked. So the Peravians have direct access through the Trobriand Empire, and they're basically able to outsource the bulk of the fighting in that sense. So they're basically the connection between the two empires is more direct than it would be back in Alpha.
Of course, then when it comes to the Klingons and the Romulans, then the Tholians show up and put a kink in the works.
on our equipment.
Was that Barry?
Yeah, I said that's one way of putting it.
Yep. Oh yeah.
Yeah. I'm starting to fall asleep here.
Understood. Understood. You're fading fast, dude.
I know.
That's fine. Know. That's fine. Well, I'll just let you go. You have a good night.
Okay.
Okay. Bye.
You too. Bye.
Don't mind me. Yeah. Yeah. You know, that's always the interesting part about that. But anyway, yeah, to me, I'm not that to me, that makes the Ravens, you know, even with the alternate history where, you know, the Ravens survive, I'm not sure why they didn't add AWRs to the to the later ships. That makes no sense to me. Now, the only possibility I can imagine myself is that they didn't have the technology to create AWRs, because I don't think the Klingons had AWRs. The Romulans, I don't think, really had no reason for AWRs. The only people that really needed AWRs were the Federation.
Well, the other thing as well is that if you look in Module C6, the Carnivons, their disruptor cannons need warp power to overload as well. But they only have APRs as well. So I wonder, maybe it's a balance issue in the sense that, like when Steve Petrick was drawing up these SSDs, he didn't want them to get too ahead of themselves in terms of like what that extra power would do. So like maybe it's basically part of the Empire as a package in terms of players being able to use them.
Mm-hmm.
So like maybe you're supposed to basically, you know, have to basically use up some of your warp engine power if you want to be able to
slow down,
not just,
you know,
the cost of doing business.
Right. Force the slowing down of the ship. That's a possibility. But of course, then why did the Federation get the AWRs? Was it that unbalanced?
Yeah, but the thing is, the Federation, they need warp power for all of the Photon Army.
That is true. And that's one thing, I don't know if there's any other weapon other than the photon torpedoes that need warp. I mean, for all its power.
Well, in Omega, ironically enough, despite the fact that they're called anti-proton weapons, the anti-proton weapons don't need warp, but the Kolagar antimatter weapons do. So
right.
I can't remember if it's, I think that there's a component of regular power and then a component of warp power, so you need the two of them together.
Mm-hmm.
And for that reason, the Kolagar also get warp reactors, because they've got a more demanding weapon for that. So, but the other thing too is that, like, if you're a Zaldan Marauder, and if you're basically figuring out what you're going to put in your weapon mounts and your system mounts,
mm-hmm.
The AWRs, they still cost more money. So, and then I guess there's more money to repair them and stuff. So, like, it's not a free lunch. Like, if you're on the margins, like, you're basically kind of like weighing up the income you're getting from either doing raids or working as a mercenary ship or whatever. And then the added cost of doing business because you're relying on weapons that require warp power. And as a result, you're throwing in the warp reactors. Then maybe it doesn't seem so obvious that you would immediately get the warp reactors, even if there's a benefit. Like, you might basically have to, draw a line somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Oh, understood. But at the same time, when it comes to Omega, to me, the thing is that given that Omega, when it comes to the territory, is so fluid because of, in my mind, the constant fighting between the different empires. You know, because there never really was that long of a peace. You know, you would think that they would have increased the technology of their weapons and improved the ability to use their weapons in a more optimized fashion, and whether, you know, including the using, you know, for like the Caligari, you know, having AWRs on their ships so they didn't have to slow down when it comes to because of the requirement for having warp energy.
Well, I mean, I suppose a way of putting it would be that if you're like a Marauder band or a Marauder cell and you're operating in a certain corner of Omega, and say if 1 year that there's one empire that controls that territory, but then if they get their butts kicked and then some other empire takes over, suddenly you've got a whole new logistical challenge to face. So you have to basically decide, are you going to keep the web? Are you going to move to where the old empire used to be and raid there? Or if you stay where you are you going to keep the weapons, even if the local access is now a problem? Or do you basically spend such enough time to, you know, switch over to the new circumstance? And that's going to be much more of a challenge than it is for, say, the Orions, because there aren't that many weapons for the Orions to switch to, because everyone uses the same phaser. And, even in the general war, I mean, there's an ebb and flow in terms of borders, but there's still certain core territories that the various empires have, except maybe for the Hydrans, because they get fully conquered in the Alma. But, make it a much bigger challenge. So I guess that would be part of the game, too. Like, if you're playing a campaign as the Sosmans, you basically have to ask yourself these questions, like, you know, is there a penalty that's imposed if the area you're fighting in gets taken over by someone else? Mm-hmm. And if there is, how do you account for switching over to a new weapon suite? Like, do you have to basically go on raids and capture those weapons directly? Or is there some sort of other mechanism that allows you to switch over? And then if the original guys come back, then what do you do then? I mean, like, you're basically, having a lot of questions to answer.
Mm-hmm. I assume that the Zosmen are something like the Orions in that to switch out the what weapons you're using requires a base.
Well, if you have, do you have Captain Slot 52 with you there?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, so if you have a look near the back of that, you'll see the Syndicate base.
Mm-hmm. Right. The Syndicate base, which is basically a beefed up FRD. At least that's what it looks like.
That's exactly right, because now the Zosmans do have home territory over in the Phi Sector. So over there, they'd most likely have fixed installations, but we don't know what those look like. But the Syndicate base is what they use when they're lodging in other parts of Omega. So because they can't really establish like a fixed base in Mithron space, for example, they have to put these Syndicate bases instead. So the idea would be that the Syndicate base would stay with the Stealth Field active, and the ship would be able to dock inside it and then deactivate the Stealth Field.
Right.
And if they need to move the Syndicate base, they can dock to heavy cruisers or heavy cruiser and defense cruiser, and they can tow the Syndicate base while the towing ships have their Stealth Field active too. So there's no point at which you have to break the Stealth Field unless, like, you know, someone basically shows up and disrupts, you know, ruins your day. But there still probably have to be, like, you know, some way of figuring out, like, exactly what the Syndicate base can do and what it can't do, because how much of the stuff it has to be brought from home, or how much of it can actually be done independently.
Right.
And that's where the fence cruiser comes in. Like, if you look on the page just before it, there's like that variant of the heavy cruiser with a really big cargo bay.
Yeah.
That is actually also a part of it too, because it's the fence cruiser that basically, like any goods that you steal, the fence cruiser would fly it back to the home base, but the home sector. But then also any new replenishments, like new weapon parts or whatever, new crew members, new Marines or whatever, the fence cruiser is what's bringing them to your syndicate base from the home colony as well. So that's actually another a part that you'd have to factor in as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's on that ship that has barracks on it, on the ship for commandos and so forth, which is...
Well, actually, if you check the OR section rule, it actually talks about how a lot of those, the barracks boxes, it's not a commando ship. Those barracks are basically there for passengers. So the idea is that you're not basically using this ship to go around and board enemy ships.
Right.
You're actually bringing the passengers. I mean, you can still use them, sort of, like if someone attacks you, but the main focus would be to get those passengers to the syndicate base. And then once they're there, you could reassign them to however many marauder ships are using that syndicate base as your home base.
So much text.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is these, the whole block of text. I didn't have a chance to read it because I'm a very slow reader. But yeah,
it's a lot. And then if you go back earlier in the book, at the OR section, there's a big wall of text there too. So, But again, this is still just playtest stuff. So now, I think, okay, so if we go to Bruce Graw for a minute, his original plan was that the modules themselves would be different. So I think his idea was that if you get a module that has, say, Nisron-type weapons, you wouldn't replace the individual weapon mounts. You would take the entire module out and then swap in, like, a Trollburn module or a Kolaghan module or whatever. Now, the current rules don't go into that kind of detail, but because, basically, right now you can pretty much, like, it's more like an Orion. You can mix and match whatever you like.
Right.
In theory, because in practice it's probably not a good idea. But I wouldn't be surprised if or when there's a chance to formally publish these guys, maybe there would actually be, like, you wouldn't necessarily, like, you wouldn't have to go too crazy with the modules, but maybe there'd be a rule that basically says, you know, if your primary zone, your primary raiding zone is a certain empire, whatever, then the modules are built, the primary modules that you use are based on that. So if you have, I think it's 70% of the weapons are from your base territory. So maybe rather than that being option mount by option mount, it would actually be module by module. But again, like, you know, that's a long way away from being decided. So the key would be people actually trying these ships and seeing if what works, because that's ultimately a better way to move these guys to closer towards publication, is if people actually, A, if they want them, and B, if they do, if they actually like playing them, and if they're able to, like, report on how things are going with them, and if they need to be modified, or if they work well as is, or what new stuff they need, that sort of thing.
Well, I think, actually, in my mind anyway, I think the idea of the Zosman, basically not having a, you know, 70%, but more of 100% weapons, you know, other than, you know, weapons that the Zosman didn't have themselves, but any of the optional weapons are from that territory, period. They have to be. I think, to me, that seems more along the lines of what Omega is designed to be, which is in some cases kind of the same, but also different, a different way of thinking. And to basically say, well, if when you go, when you went to that territory, you basically, you stole or acquired those weapons for whatever whatever territory that you were currently in, and that's the weapons you used, because you were very flexible in what you had as a ship, and also what's you know, weapon power systems that you had available to you. You know, they were very flexible in that regard. again, if you need something that requires warp, okay, we can convert those APRs to AWRs with no issue, and have it so that becomes a requirement, so that there's not as much of a flexibility of what the ships have. It's like, okay, this is the package that you have because you're dealing with it because it's the cheapest weapons out there to get. And you're going to optimize for that. Now, obviously, that if you really think about that, it becomes problematic if the ships that you're fighting against have the same weapons. You know, it's almost a civil war in that case, a civil war battle, which always is difficult.
Well, I mean, that's less of an issue in Omega because there's relatively few empires that use the same weapons as it is. So, and also the Zordsmans have, their ships have relatively fewer phaser or weapon mass in the first place.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Like, if you look at their heavy cruiser, it only has, at maximum, it has 6 phasers, 3 on either side, and it has 2 weapon launchers on the front. So that's 10 weapon mounts, and that's assuming that you don't swap out one of the weapon modules for a system module. So, I mean, yes, the ship has other things, like it's got shuttles, and you can take FRA shuttle bombs because the Zordsmans incorporate them into their own technology. And, you know, you've got the stealth field, of course, which is the big thing. But in terms of actually fighting, like shooting at somebody, you're not quite on the same level, for the most part, as the empires that you're trying to raid or work as a mercenary for.
Mm-hmm. True. So.
But I do like the fact that they don't have any of that Orion engine building. Because,
right.
It's characterful if a ship is like a character ship. Like, for example, the Orion ship that the FRA has, Thrawn putting on this.
Right.
I mean, that ship is basically a character in and of itself. So
right.
It having its engine doubling, it would make a good, like a TV show.
Mm-hmm. Oh, but at the same time,
I don't think it makes as balanced a fleet as what we have with the Zossmans. Because the Zossmans, I mean, sure, they've got a few power options for their modules, but by and large, their power curves aren't that bad.
Agreed. And definitely, Zossmen are more designed for fleet action because Orions are not really designed for fleet action. They're not supposed to be used in a fleet action. And the one thing about the Orions, they have this then the ability to double their engines, which, of course, they only can do so much. It's the whole idea, it's the cocaine issue. You know, you get souped up on this, having all this power, but okay, if you don't use it wisely, you're wasting the power, in which case you're taking damage from doubling your engines. But more importantly, more to the point is that with Orions, the number of internals they have are less than, you know, when it comes to the same cost, than other ships, which means they have to use their doubling of their engines judiciously to protect themselves when they need it, and, you know, and for those attack runs, and then get out of dodge quickly, because there's only so much you can actually double your engines before you are you're doubling engines just to stay even with the amount of power that you need to just function, that has the ship function, you know.
Mm-hmm. So one final thing, actually. Do you have Captain Talk 50 there as well?
Yeah.
Could you have a look at the Zossman heavy cruiser for a second?
Sure. Okay, there's the frigate. Heavy cruiser, got it right here.
Yeah. So if you look at that ship, now I mentioned this on the VBS before, but I was basically following the same idea you were for tournament play. Because if you look at that ship, and if you include the warp refit, for tournament at least, I would sooner prefer offering packages based on Empire rather than a one, like the same kind of thing you do with the Orions, where because like an Orion tournament ship, you can mix and match the option maps.
Right.
But for this thing, I would sooner say, all right, well, if you're a home defense Zosman, you use, or if you're in Nisran space, you're using Nisran weapons. So tachyon guns, tachyon missiles, wide angle phasers, and that's it. And, oh yeah, and AWR, APRs, no AWRs. You're only allowed to have AWRs if the empire you're based, you're based on uses them. So, for example, if you do a tournament Zosman that's in Kalinar space,
right,
then you get the AWRs. But right, if you're in Nisran space, you don't. So with that caveat in mind, do you think that the ship that you're looking at there would be the good basis for a tournament ship?
Okay, let me look. Okay, this is turn mode of B, which is not that's good. Movement cost is one, right? Yeah, movement cost of one. And 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, so if it has the refit, I think I can see ship description. Basically, if it has the full 42 power. Let me look at internals. Yeah, no. I'd have to look at the weapons. It might be a little overpowering, but I'd have to look. I say 42 power actually might not be bad because of the Lyran have 40 power and they have very power hungry ships. But you know, overall, yeah, wow, they're only worth what? That's only worth 90. Well, actually, that's 95, and then you have to include the BPB for the different weapons. And I think it is a good starting point. That the Zosman heavy cruiser is definitely a good starting point for a tournament cruiser. And I agree.
Yeah, it's 115 points with the warp refit.
Mm-hmm. Which, as you know, if I might as well point it out, which is with a warp refit, it doesn't matter. If you don't have weapons that require warp, there's no reason to have a warp refit at all. It's pointless.
Well, bear in mind, the ship can't, it's much slower without the warp refit. Like, it only has speed 24 from the warp engines before the refit's installed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, when you have weapons that require warp power, yes. Mm-hmm. And I agree that it needs, I think when it comes to Barry's Omega ships, every single one basically are later war refits, so we can go, they can go speed 30. You know, like unlike the earlier years, which is like they couldn't. I think their top speed was, I forget what it was, but definitely wasn't 30 or 31.
Yeah, most of the current Omega ships, they're limited to speed 26, but the Federal Republic ships can go to speed 28. But there are a few captains, I guess, actually in this very same issue. If you turn back in CF 52, I should say. There's playtest Troburn and Tolagar command cruisers that have warp refit options as well. So once the refit's installed, the ship can fight at speed 30 as well. But those, I guess, they're still in playtest. So,
are you talking about the early command cruisers? You're talking about the early command cruisers. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And the Tolagar command cruiser as well.
Right, right. I see both the Color Guard early command cruiser and also the Troban early command cruiser again.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and even though I know some people in the chat room disagree, because people, I understand that people like the whole idea of customizing their ship to optimize it. That's one of the draws of the Orion. When it comes to the Zosman thing, I feel like they need to be different. They can't be just a copy of the Orion. You know, so that you can tweak your weapons all the way you want. No, that's not what the Zosman to me are meant to design. They're not meant to be. Unlike the Orion, the Zosmans have territory and a home planet, you know, core planets that they're trying to protect and try to provide for. It's not just out there fighting for themselves and enriching themselves. It's a different motivation, and therefore a different way of thinking, you know, because this is almost extension of a navy to a certain degree.
Well, I guess the thing is that, I mean, the idea, you still want people to try these things because right. Nothing's set in stone just yet. So I think maybe there's a twin track approach that could be taken. Track one is present the ship the way it is in its home space. So give it the least strong weapons. And so basically you just say that the phasers are wide angle phaser ones. But let the player decide if they want the forward weapons to be tachyon guns or phasers or tachyon missiles.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I would just stick with the tachyon guns. But when it comes to a pirate heavy cruiser that people are using in tournaments, yes, I still think that giving them like a set depending on what the host empire is would be ideal.
Mm-hmm.
But if people want to play tests using a mix and match, then I don't know if it's worth. Like, I mean, maybe make the sets recommended sets.
Right.
Basically, say like this ship doesn't have a lot of weapon modes.
Yeah,
and it's probably better to try to make the ship work, max optimize it for its host empire. But if you want to prove me wrong, then mix and match based on the annex. B rules, like in terms of like how many weapons take up a certain module, what weapon space, whatever. And if it works for you, it works for you. But it can't guarantee that the results will be as beneficial as they would be for an Orion.
Oh, agreed. But I agree that it would be a way of encouraging people to play the Zosman Raiders in a tournament environment, and therefore play test it more and be more interested in the ships themselves than otherwise. They might be, if you just say, okay, well, depending upon the territory, this is the weapons that it has. But at the same time, if you run into the same issues that currently we have with the Orions in the tournament, which is they had to put limitations on what weapons that they could actually select. For example, you can't have two phaser Gs or more than one phaser G on a tournament Orion cruiser. You can't. It's not allowed. The rules stated as such because they found out that's way too powerful. In which case, you're going to have to tweak it, or at least you might have to work on tweaking it more, possibly even to the degree where certain weapons combinations are illegal. You know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and also for the Orion phaser Gs, they don't make it. So, I mean, you could try to mix and match your phaser ones, like phaser, right, radiation phaser one or wide angle phaser one. But are you really benefiting from doing that? Because,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if you are. I mean, like, again, that's, if people were to try to find that out, that's great.
Yeah, yeah.
I like to think that the way in which Omega weapons are written right now, that they kind of basically stop you from gaming the system that way.
Right.
Because, like, if you think of the anti-proton weapons, like, if this ship wanted to basically use the lance, well, the lance takes up two central line adjacent option modes. So that's one of your boxes taken up by this. And there's no point taking the lance if you don't take at least two anti-proton beams for you to be able to double the weapons. So mm-hmm. then that's the other module taken up. So the very rule for the lance itself basically forces you to take a certain configuration for the heavy weapons.
Right.
And for the phasers, I mean, if you're already going for the anti-proton beams, then I guess you're going to be getting close range. And then if you're going to be close range, why wouldn't you max out on the anti-proton phasers? So, like, would you want to mix and match then? Because if you get up close and you're not able to, you know, follow up on the damage that you're doing with the lance, is that better or not? I don't think so. But again, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's, yeah, I leave it to people to, you know, prove me wrong as well. But I do think that the ship itself is basically, it's really calling for sticking with the technology that a certain empire has available and trying to get the most out of it at any one time. Which includes the Paravians, because, I mean, yes, the Paravians get the anti-proton weapons too, but I don't necessarily think that, like, say, for example, if the Paravians and Omega are allowed to have the quantum wave torpedoes and they get the new anti-proton weapons they have in CL-54, I don't think the Paravians themselves should try to mix and match those technologies, because even the Paravian ships don't have enough heavy weapon mounts to make it work, because they need them to optimize the lance. So I think it's better for the Paravians. The ships that have quantum wave torpedoes, they should stick with the alpha octane phaser ones. And the ships that have the anti-proton lance and the beams, they should be the only ones to get the anti-proton phasers. So if you're a Zosman ship, and if you're basically saying, okay, my Zosman ship is in Paravian space, then I would probably suggest, if you want to put the quantum wave torpedoes in, stick with the alpha octane phasers, because the ranges that you're firing the quantum wave torpedoes, the alpha phasers are better. But if you want to try and put the anti-proton phasers in and keep the quantum wave torpedoes, then away you go. But if the weapons don't match, then don't say you haven't been one.
Oh, understood. But the point is, when it comes to the tournament and the Orion, they had the limit, not just that one thing. Also, the limit, you have five in the Orion battle raid. You have five option mounts. Two, the wing option mounts, that's two of them. You're limited to three possible weapons: phaser, drone, or fusion beam. That's it. So you have three option mounts that you actually can choose a wide variety of weapons, and that had to be done for basically to have it so that people weren't completely utterly, you know, gaming it, so that they have these unbeatable Orion ships, and I think also opening the Zosman to that same ability will probably have to come down on the same thing, which is might have to take what that might have what four option mounts and say, well, you only actually can select weapons for two of them, because two of them have to be these selection, or maybe just one of them. But, you know, the idea is that those selections might have to be limited so that to make it well balanced overall when it comes to tournament play. Now, obviously, that's one of those things it takes a while to actually, after playing it for a while, in some cases, not playing for very, very long. It depends upon the person, because there's one person that he could read the rules and really understand them like a lawyer, which actually he was a lawyer, which is Paul Scott. He really had an insight into Starfleet battles when it comes to the rules. And I'm sure that he could probably find the optimum way of doing things and even see the issues with using Zosman and have it so that you can select any weapons that are available in the Omega sector. Omega Octant, sorry. So.
Mm-hmm.
But Actually, that's not a bad idea, Iggy. Iggy was suggesting a topic for a future episode: weapons and technology that were a design mistake. I think we can definitely hit upon quite a few of those overall, or possibly even episode on what we consider rules failures. You know, when it comes to systems and just the rules themselves and how they fall down in certain aspects. But anyhow, it's getting late. I gotta get up in another 6 hours, so I need to shut down and put everything together before it gets too late at night. So, Gary, it's been a pleasure.
Have a good night.
Okay, you too. Okay, bye. So, ladies and gentlemen, we had a nice discussion there on Omegas, and especially in the latter half, we'll talk about the Zosman Raiders and some of the ways of maybe introducing them and getting some actual playtest reports on them, and you know, hopefully people pick up the cabinet logs and do that. Actually, I might have to talk to Steve Cole to see if we can add a few of those ships, maybe this one, like a tournament ship, into the client so that we can play the Zosman as a tournament cruiser, you know, something limited so that it wouldn't upset things. But I think that'd be kind of actually a cool idea. Maybe I'll email Steve Cole to see if he'd be interested. At least he would allow that to occur. So anyway, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.